This is GamesAtWork.biz with your hosts, Phaedra Boynodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization with which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 52, Swapping Your Battery in 90 Seconds. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a beautiful Friday, and it's time for some Games at Work with my wonderful co-host, Michael Martin.
Woohoo! Hey, Michael, I'm glad to be here on a rainy day in Budapest.
Yeah, we've had so much rain the last week. We actually had a set of white caps on the creek in the back of our yard that was just overflowing its bounds. So just as a quick reminder, you know, each week we explore the world of play and how companies are using gaming technologies and techniques within their business. And don't forget, we'd love to hear from you. And we really want you to, you know, rate our podcast over on iTunes. It really helps us out. Or drop us an email over on our website at gamesatwork.biz. We've got some really cool, fun, exciting stuff this week. So, Michael, you had sent out a tweet earlier this week on an interesting AR app that you had found.
Yeah, in fact, I did it just yesterday.
And, was it yesterday?
I think it was yesterday. It was like moments ago. If it wasn't yesterday, it felt like yesterday. I come across the glasses.com application for the iPad. And we have talked about on prior shows to this, and I think it was over on Dog Ear Nation quite some time ago, the concept of dressing up and using a mirror to do some virtual clothes shopping and seeing how things looked and sharing with friends.
My virtual model was a company that did that. And I think they actually at one time had done some stuff with Sears.
That's right. That's right. Now, thank you for remembering. I was trying to remember the name of them. So I come across this application from glasses.com on the iPad, and they said, hey, you know, there are companies now that you can get a bunch of glasses, you know, 3-4 different frames, have them sent to your home. You can try them on. You can check them out. But what this app does is it does a 3D rendered model of your head and allows you then to virtually try on different glasses and shortlist the ones that you like the best and then share them with your friends and family and random people at large and see what reaction you might get off from them and then turn around and buy them. I thought it was great.
Yeah, I thought it was cool I got some complaints. I'll do both. I thought it was cool because you could really, you know, put up a list of four and then do a voting, right? And say, these are the ones I'm thinking about. Everybody vote. And then, you know, get the feedback, tally it up, and decide to buy those. The thing I didn't like was, well, I'll go some more stuff that I like. I liked the fact that the app really did a good job of walking you through step by step how to do the facial capture so that it could figure out the 3D structure of your face, as well as the placement of the glasses on the bridge of your nose, how much of it goes behind your ear, et cetera. All really, really good positive things. Well done. Maybe a little bit over prescriptive in the steps that they take you through.
No pun intended.
In the steps they take you through. But I know why they're doing it, and it leads you to a really positive experience of trying on the glasses. So that was all good.
It was good outcome. Very good outcome. Yes. I agree with you. It was super simple. And, you know, putting the iPad on the chin where they asked you to, they know where that is because they know where your chin is from the picture, and they know how big that is from an iPad. I just very sharp, very sharp.
The thing I did not like was I went in and I wanted to look at glasses, and I wanted to get four or five different types of glasses at one time to go through and then pick the ones that I wanted. And it seemed to ignore the fact that I had chosen like four brands to look at, and it would only pull up the top brand. Then I would go through and I'd have to flag the one that I like or the ones that I like. Then I had to go back out and choose, you know, the next brand. Same thing. So I had to go through that multiple times until I had chosen six glasses that I liked. But when I wanted to share it, I had to shrink it down to four.
Right, right. Yeah, that's kind of tough when you're shrinking them down to have your top four. But I guess I can understand where they're trying to not, you know, have a screen full of 40 different glasses that people have to choose from. So I get that.
Yeah, and like I said, overall, really cool, really liked it. Just little things like that that just, you know, drove me nuts. But then again, I was watching the videos, not listening to them on the instructions. I did like the fact that you could take the picture and move the position of your head so that you can get, like, what's your favorite shot that you want people to look at, you know?
Yes.
So yes. That was cool. That was cool. And I noticed on yours, it was almost the same as all the other pictures of you. You have a very defined angle that you put your head in pictures.
I guess I must do.
You do. It may be subconscious, but it was funny because I was like, oh, that's a Michael picture. Well done, sir. Well done.
Well, I liked it a lot, and it'll be interesting to see if Phaedra does a similar thing for us, too. I think – I'm not sure if she has an iPad, though, so we'll have to go see.
But she does have
my wife had fun with it.
Yeah, cool. And so did you order any?
No, I didn't, because typically when I buy glasses, I buy prescription glasses.
Yes.
So they're on the glasses.com website. You can choose to do prescription glasses. Mm-hmm. However, on this particular application, there was not a facility to allow for that. So maybe that's in version 1.1. But
yeah, because you want to put in your prescription so that then they, you know, choose the glass you want, put in your prescription, have them send you a prescription version of those glasses.
Yes.
Yes. Very cool. Well,
all right.
We have another link. This one, actually, Ian Smith, who I worked with years ago in IBM's virtual universe community and figuring out how to do some cool stuff with gaming technology, and who also does some pretty incredible photography. So if you want to check out, look up Ian Smith out of the UK, does great photography work. Anyway, he posted a link and said, "This is why I don't let my kids play games." And so I was like, okay, I've got to look at this link. So this is a link from the Game of Sutro website. One of their bloggers, I hope I don't butcher his name too badly, Raman Chokrazadi.
Oh, that's probably pretty close.
It's better than if I had said something else, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah, I never know. So it's pretty close.
Had a link on the free-to-play monetization tricks that gamers, game development companies will use to milk as much money out of people as possible when playing these freemium games. You know, we all know them. The Simpsons is a great example of their Tapped Out app is a freemium game. And I'm wondering how many of these things apply. From my read-through, I think it was pretty much all of them. So that tells you something. Farmville, matter of fact, the Star Wars The Old Republic online game does the same thing, too, with their new virtual currency. Anyway.
Oh, they're almost every single game does these days. There is some sort of premium, you know, currency, some dollar, some coin, some something that you can go and buy.
Well,
right?
the part that was really so here's the basic premise. There are a set of tricks. I think it was like 6 tricks that he talks about. And the one that really got me was what we would call the crack model, right? Which is where you give some of the premium currency to the person up front. And then you do something in the game to require them to use it so they can get the, you know, that first hit, that first positive experience out of using this freemium thing. It may be, you know, the ability to do a certain adventure in an adventure game, or the ability to get a neat building in a Farmville type game that causes, you know, some of their positive effect.
Right.
But then you start adding more and more of these types of things in the game later on, where you're going to have to buy them in order to pay for the currency in order to do it. The Simpsons game early on had cleanup that you would do on the land that you built on, and you could get premium currency every once in a while out of it. And so you would build up a little stockpile of it. And then, oh, cool, there's a police car that you want, which will open up this quest line. And so you would spend money on that. That, to me, is probably the most devious. Which one did you think was the most devious way of playing with people on this?
Well, gosh, I mean, there's lots of ways
of
thinking through that. But let me kind of riff off of your point first, then maybe we'll go on to some of the others that I thought were – I mean, I don't know if it's devious. I don't think it's devious. I think it is a way of getting people – you use the word crack, but you get people used to doing something. Because once you get people over the hump of doing something the first time, then doing it repeatedly – requires less and less effort. So when you go through a game that gives you, you know, gems or some sort of premium currency, and you spend it because you're going through the tutorial, and then they give you that premium currency back again, you know, you start to feel good. It's like, okay, that's fine. And if the game allows you to accumulate some of that premium currency by simply playing it, they're keeping you hooked enough on the game that you don't have to go through the practice of purchasing it. But if you go through and take that first purchase, you've now been converted from a tire kicker to a buyer.
Yes.
And then you are a buyer. And then the next time you need to buy, you've already pre-justified in your mind, well, you know, I've been playing this game for a while, and really isn't it right that I give those game developers some money because they've worked really hard? And yeah, I could go do that. And then it becomes a little bit easier and easier until you find yourself with $1,000 that you've spent on a game buying virtual things that are not necessarily all that great to you or your friends or anybody.
Right. It's not like you can print out a map of your little Simpson world.
Right. And what Dan Ariely has written about in his Predictably Irrational book, and one of the commenters in the responses to this blog post kind of noted this, and I heard him say such a thing when he was giving the graduation speech a couple of weeks ago to my high school graduation class of 2013.
You just graduated high school?
To my high school. Think about where the my came from. My high school's graduation.
I couldn't hear the comma.
Yeah. So I find it really interesting the fact that you can do this kind of one level of substitution. Actually, it's two levels of substitution deep here, right? Because you're not spending money out of your wallet and your pocket. You're spending money off of your credit card. That's one level of abstraction on a premium currency. That's a second level of abstraction. And there are plenty of psychological studies out there that show that the more levels of abstraction that you do, and even the first one is usually good enough, you can easily find yourself justifying, yeah, I'll just go spend that. Yep. And that can be done for a variety of different reasons. I actually myself justified to myself today in getting some I'll admit it, some Under Armour products. And the way the Under Armour products purchasing experience worked was if you bought over a certain amount, you were upgraded immediately to next day shipping.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, it's like, well, okay, I will go for that because I kind of need it next day shipping anyway, and that'll save me like $25. I went ahead and found a way to fill my cart.
Yep.
And so people
so they
will
gamed you.
Yeah, I succumb to the do you want fries with that?
Yes.
Right, because I could have said, well, I was really after three of the Under Armour compression heat gear shirts, which, by the way, are awesome. They're really good. They wick sweat away. They keep you cool. They're just fabulous. And I needed some, and I had to have some. And once I got those three shirts, and I realized, well, okay, now I was either going to pay like $25 to have them sent quickly, or I could pay. I could get something else and save that $25 and get $25 more product if I bought a little bit higher. I found a way to justify that I need to get a little bit more.
Yep. So I think the key thing, there were two keys that I heard out of that. One was the behavior to identify the buyer, right? And
yes.
Two, the ability to abstract away the upsell that's going to happen to the point to where you justify it yourself and feel good about justifying it.
Exactly. And those are psychological methods of incenting behaviors that the game designers wish to have happen. And there are elements of reciprocity that are in play. There are elements of there are all kinds of very interesting psychological elements that are here. And I think it makes sense that the game designers operate with those principles because they're not trying to create something just to create a fun game to play. They're trying to feed families and they're trying to build shareholder value. And that's what companies do.
So you and I go ahead.
So I'm going, I think, right where you were, Michael. You and I, when we were talking about this in the pre-show, were saying, gosh, isn't this cool in the way that we now can apply games to work? And we wanted to explore some of these concepts about how the same techniques could work within a work setting to incent employee behavior in a way that's consistent with the desired outcomes for the business, as opposed to saying, well, you know, children, they're not children anymore, they're adults, you know, between the demographic ages, what do they say, of 18 and 24 or something like that, you know, they're our target market and they have not developed their brains to the point where they're able to effectively defend against these kinds of methods.
The maturing of the brain takes till about 25 before you're able to address these types of decisions, right? This is part of the what they call the pain relief versus long-term opportunity cost, which is handled in the prefrontal cortex of the brain. And so, you know, you go for that I got to deal with it right now. I've got to have it now because there's more value in that than in waiting, you know, waiting the extra day for your shirts to show up.
Well, right. So if we think about it in terms of a work construct, I mean, many workflows potentially could have a gaming element associated with them. The thing that sprung to mind when I was first reading through this earlier today was if I think about a traditional workflow where a set of data gets manipulated, added on, changed as it goes through the process in support of some sort of transaction by one customer, one part of the business with another part of the business, there could very well be power-ups that could be spent to achieve with some sort of, I'll call them also an in-game currency, so some sort of premium currency to speed things along. And if a workflow could be structured in such a fashion that allowed for that to happen, additional efficiencies could be discovered in the way that people decided to spend their acceleration premium currency. So if you think about how people do process mapping and process modeling of a workflow, oftentimes you'll say, well, how long does it really take to do step one to step two? And then I've got a gate, and then I've got a decision criteria. I can go one of three different paths, and then I kind of get to the end. And good business process modeling people will model all that stuff. And then they will, after they model it, then they'll say, what's the shortest, you know, most effective way to get from the beginning of the process to the end? But you don't always know that because you don't know all the intricacies of that model, and there may be things there you just hadn't thought about. But if you give the people who are executing that process, again, we'll call it a premium in-game currency, some sort of power-up that allows them to bypass certain things, you might be able to discover ways much more quickly of speeding the throughput on that process than you would if you were just looking at it from a Six Sigma black belt technique.
Right. So you're incenting the shortest path, the fastest route through the business process maze that has been developed or created to address this one specific outcome. And so by incenting that, you will encourage people to identify that shortest path, the fastest turnaround time. Whether you're talking about a manufacturing floor where you're trying to, you know, increase throughput and reduce WIP work in progress, or reduce the amount of inventory stacking up, so you're now incenting the salespeople in a way to drive faster distribution of product to end customers.
And it might also highlight what is important to the people executing the process versus what others think is important as it goes through the process. You know, there might be some lower priority transactions that the people who are executing the process determine they want to spend their currency on. And that would lead to some very interesting questions about, like, well, why did you choose to do that there instead of for this other one here? You
right,
know, that,
right.
That one's worth only $5,000. This one's worth $25,000. Why didn't you do the speed up bonus, you know, buff on that one?
Yeah, help identify where the process is being suboptimized.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there can be some really interesting ways to allow these kind of gaming techniques to get played. I think the potential backfire here, you know, just thinking out loud, is that you would have people questioning, well, look, these buffs you're describing of this in-game currency, that's an abstraction of the real world. You know, the reality is you could spend all that you want. So maybe you put everything through that faster buff bonus path. And maybe that's the right outcome in the end too. So perhaps the counter to that potential criticism is this helps you identify whether that channel is really effective, can work, and can scale to meet the needs for everything. And
well,
if it really is good for everything, do it.
Yeah, I think there's a really key thing there that calls out, though, and that's the metrics and measures and the data that you're tracking and the analysis you get from that data to make sure that you're actually achieving that goal. Again, you may assume that I'm driving for throughput, and you know, mm-hmm. if I do X, Y, and Z, I'll get faster throughput. But if that causes a significant amount of rework and problems, then you're actually decreasing your throughput. And so by identifying all the key, you know, metrics, key performance indicators across the board, and actually checking and measuring against those, you will better improve the process overall. And this gets me to the next item in this list here, which is skill games versus money games, uh-huh. right? Which is uh-huh. where they start off doing things in the game to identify, you know, how good you are at something, and they ratchet up the skill level to where it's really hard, but you can still do it for free.
Right.
And then they get to the point where, again, identifying the buyer, they put a challenge that's so difficult that you absolutely have to spend some of this premium or freemium currency. And they identify the people who are going to be triggered by that event to actually want to invest and spend the money to get over that. And then you start changing the rules of the game so that it encourages more and more spending of the currency, i.e. more and more payment, to where it's no longer actually a game of skill that you're trying to achieve better and better scores in, but you're actually just paying to ratchet up your score. What do you think of that? And let's see how we can flip that to a positive business angle.
Yeah, to me, this is a tough one, right? Because when you think about business, the intent here is to make people expert in their tasks and to increase their productivity as fast as possible. So this particular one, I was struggling to say, okay, what's the better way to put a business spin on this? Because you don't want to create such insurmountable obstacles in front of the user in a business setting that they have to do some sort of payment. I mean, people who are at work are being paid to do work as opposed to paying to do work.
You want to talk about reward removal?
Well, I mean, these are some interesting things that I don't know translate super effectively from a game world to a business world. I mean, I have not played many games myself where I lose all my progress or all of the things that I've achieved programmatically by the game unless I pay money toward it. I mean, there are certainly time elements, and we all pay with the attention economy. We've talked about this before with time. But I've not – have you played a game before where if you didn't fork over some dough, you were not going to be able to retain what you had?
No. I was trying to think of one. And I mean, I know multiple games where if you don't fork over some dough, you can't advance, right? But where you lose the advance that you already done – already have achieved. I have never seen a game like this, and to me, this would be an immediate full stop game. Wouldn't play it anymore.
Well, I wouldn't either. I mean, there are a couple of there's a couple of games. There was a racing game that I was playing for a while where I had earned, you know, the in-game currency that I could have purchased, but I earned the in-game currency to get more in different cars, and that was fun. And I mean, the game itself was pretty simple. You know, you had to press the screen at certain points to shift properly, and it was not much of a skill game, you know, to use the language that was in the article. And in that game, it did get to a point where, for whatever reason, they lost my cars. And, you know, after playing it for a while, I was like, you know, guess what, guys? Done. Deleted it. I was done.
So maybe they lost your cars in the same way. It just was they treated it as a bug or a problem that you could fix instead of here is a technique to maybe they tried to do this one and they did it badly.
I don't think so. I think it was legitimately a problem with their servers or something. Because, you know, if they said, look, sorry, we've lost your cars, but you can buy them back now and here's how much it'll cost, then I would know that that was underhanded.
Yeah.
There are some other games that are out there right now. So I was looking at the various LEGO iOS games because I heard that they are actually on sale this week or weekend for 99 cents a piece. And I'm a big fan of LEGO games. I love them on the Wii, you know, the Star Wars ones and the Indiana Jones one. I mean, there's lots of fun LEGO games, and the humor is great, and it's good to play with younger children because the worst thing that happens is your guy turns into a pile of bricks and then he reassembles himself, you know, so I like them. But when I was reading the reviews, the LEGO Batman game in particular, the last, you know, couple of pages of reviews are like, don't buy this game. I bought in-game purchased characters, and they got lost. And my daughter, you know, spent her hard-earned allowance money, and these are gone. And don't buy it. It's like, geez, not good, you know? So
yeah,
I would think that games that follow this kind of pattern would get a immediate social bad rep and would be avoided at all costs by other game players.
Yeah, I tried playing the LEGO Batman on my iMac. I think I had like a free demo version or something. And I like the concept of the LEGO games. I just don't execute well on them.
Well, some of the aspects of them are really quite tough. I mean, you got to collect some of these red bricks in order to get the little models done. And in some cases, you have to complete various missions in order to open up new, you know, storylines there like you would in other games. And then, you know, that requires some trial and error, and that requires some, you know, focus and digging around. And then eventually you're like, okay, where's the hint guide? I need some help here because I can't figure it out. And then you're like, oh, okay, if I go behind that tree and start, you know, using my lightsaber on the tree, then a red brick will pop out, or a gold brick, or whatever.
Yeah.
So
it does sound though that one of the things that plays out here is that you have these games that progress you to a certain point, and then have that progress gate, right? That. Maybe not coerce you into losing what you've done, but says you've invested, you know, 30 hours playing this game. Now there's this cool additional feature, but to get to that, you have to pay for it. And, you know, I experienced this exact thing with the Dungeons & Dragons Online game some years back. it started off and you could like get to like level 3 or 5, somewhere around there, with your mm-hmm. character. And all the dungeons were available that were in that level. But if you wanted to go to, you know, level 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 or 12, right, you know, much higher level characters, you had to pay to do those other dungeons. So kind of sure. like the South Park episode where they were killing pigs in the forest. playing World of Warcraft, because anytime they tried to do anything harder, this guy would come in and kill them.
Right. That's right. They're running around, yeah, doing the basic grinding stuff, and then right. I remember now.
In order to get past level 5, you pretty much had to, you know, grind these low level dungeons that got you nothing, and at a certain point, they stopped even giving you any experience. So I think progress gates make sense. To, you know, break through, to challenge the person to do better, to improve their skills, etc. But where they have to be, you know, pay to play to progress, that again tends to be very coercive to me. And I couldn't think of a good way of doing this in a positive business way, right? That says, you know, if I'm an employee, well, I guess certifications are progress gates. So if you want to be, you know, a high-level project manager, you pretty much have to be PMI certified. And well, that is a gate that you have to pay, and you have to take courses, you have to pay for take the test, et cetera, and those are progress gates.
And they can be taken away, because if you don't go through the recertification on a prescribed interval, you lose the certification.
Excellent idea. Yes, so, that's absolutely right.
So I guess you're right. There is some element of that that's in place there. But
professional certifications.
Okay. Professional certification is probably the way to think about that in terms of a game structure.
Ooh, I like that. And you know, we all do them. I was PMI certified and kept it for a while and realized I didn't want to play anymore.
And sometimes the way to win the game
is not to play.
Is not to play.
That's too funny. Let's see if there's any other good ones that we can actually play in a positive way. So the last one he talks about is called anti-games. You know, this is...
Right, A-N-T-E as yes. opposed to A-N-T-I.
I was about to describe people. The thing. This is like a game of poker where you have to put up an ante in order to actually start the game, right?
Yep.
And I guess there are certifications are so perfect for this stuff. There are other certifications, like if you're looking for a job as a project manager, you know, your ante could be that you need to be PMI certified. Or a PMI, a PMP certified.
Or number of years of experience. Or successfully managing projects above a certain budget threshold. Or having a certain technology background.
Yep. Right? I actually had a guy who used to work for me who I think he loved this game because he would actively go out and seek new certifications all the time. I think that's mm-hmm. what he did in his spare time was get certified and stuff, even if it didn't have any direct correlation to the job he had or the job he was positioning himself for.
Well, it's a way of having an external third party vouch for skills. So really, when you boil it down, certifications are saying that this other entity or group or people say that I have the skills that I say I have.
Exactly.
Right. So in that sense, you know, you do have to put some money on the table or put some attention on the table in order to achieve those things. And actually that person that you're probably thinking of, you know, did figure out that skill development and skill generation and learning is a good thing to do because it helps you maybe when you least expect it, because there could be an RFI or an RFP or, you know, some opportunity that requires something very esoteric that, oh, well, look, I actually have it. So there you go. Ta-da.
Yeah, yeah. Well, again, that was the game he liked to play. he was really into certifications.
Yeah, so that what I took away from this was that there are certain games out there that require you to put up a significant amount of money before you're actually even able to play. And I was trying to think about what that might be in the business world. There's a few of them that I could think of, but it's a stretch, you know, beyond the certification. You know, you could think of if you want to get into the electric mobility business, you know, you've got to invest in a lot of infrastructure in order to make things work well. I happened to go out and look at the Tesla website recently just to kind of kick a few things around there, and I saw what the Tesla Corporation is doing to ensure those with range anxiety that there will be places and spaces
30-minute swap out.
Yeah, up and down the coastline and across the country, so that you could go and you would be able to get recharged or swap out your battery. Actually, not 30-minute swap out. It's less than that. They had a video up that I watched where they swapped two batteries in two cars faster than you could fill up the gas tank of one car.
Yeah.
They showed a video of a guy filling up the gas tank of an Audi while they drove a car up on the stage, swapped the battery, and then put another car up and said, well, we have some more time. Let's swap another car. Swap that one out too. And then the guy got into his car and drove away, and there was two Teslas with full battery charges.
Wow. Wow. I heard the video. I remember a 30-minute time limit or target. I didn't realize it was that fast. That's awesome.
Yeah, there are ways of accelerating the charge, but it's for the people who just can't wait, you could go and swap the battery. So swapping the battery, now let's go back to our gaming here, will cost you, but if you want to be charged, that you can do for free.
Yep. Very cool.
So interesting way of the what was the term that we used? The fun pain?
Yes.
Right? You know, if you decide that you want to speed things up and move along and you want that power up or that buff, you can pay for it or you can wait for it. And in our attention economy, I think that is a really lovely way of showing that game principle at work in a way that people will latch on or not.
Yeah, I think that's a great example. I mean, I hadn't thought about that one, but that's perfect. And, you know, I too have been looking at the Tesla. As you know, I've been following them for a very long time, and I would love to have one. Those are gorgeous cars. But, you know, I have battery swappage issues. So I think we're out of time.
We've got one more thing that we wanted to talk about, didn't we? And then we're going to call it a day?
Are we saving that? No, let's save that one for next week. Why don't you tease it up, and we'll also get Phaedra's reaction next week on the show.
Yeah, that'll be great. So the tease for next week is for girls to be interested in engineering programs and degrees and careers, what kind of games might they play to help them get ready for such a career? So I've got a good one. I'm really excited about it. I'll share it with you next week.
Yep. And we'll also, you know, we might even throw something out on one of our many, many social sites to get you interested and get your thoughts on it before the show. And don't forget to reach out to us on all these different sites, whether that's Twitter at games@work_biz or obviously on our website at games@work.biz or on our Facebook page at facebook.com/games@work biz or our Tumblr at games@work.tumblr.com or on our Google Plus page. And I'd love to give you a very simple URL for that one, but right now it's
a lot of numbers.
It's a lot of numbers, a long string of numbers, but you can get to it from our website. We have a link over to the Google Plus page also. And with that, I think we've got a show here, and we'd love to hear from you. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes. We need your help there. So thank you very much. And we'll talk to you later. Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.